Welcome to The Culture of Life, a new show that focuses on all aspects of the dignity of human life, from immigration to euthanasia, from conception until natural death. And now here's your host, Chuck Harvey.
All right, welcome to Culture of Life, the program where we focus on the various issues in our culture that relate to the Catholic vision for establishing a culture of life. I'm Chuck Harvey, your host. Today, we have a special guest, Bill Donahue, from the Theology of the Body Institute, and we're going to talk about John Paul II's Theology of the Body and how that relates to the whole issue of life and establishing, again, that culture of life as envisioned by the Catholic Church and by the writings of St. John Paul II. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Chuck.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I'm very excited about this course coming up next month.
All right, we're going to get to that in a minute. Tell us about the theology of the body. What is the theology of the body for anyone out there in our audience who hasn't delved into it?
Sure, and boy, I'm glad we have an hour to unpack this. It's a wonderful vision, really. It's Catholicism at its core. It's the faith. It's the gospel reloaded in a fresh vision by St. John Paul II. So objectively, it's a teaching he wrote as a book from 1974 to 1978. He became pope and started to deliver this teaching theology of the body over the first 5 years of his pontificate. And in a nutshell, again, it's the gospel reloaded. The theology of the body is a meditation on the human person created male and female and called to life-giving, fruitful love. So John Paul looks to understand God, the mystery of who God is. He looks at man and woman as the image of God. And so we come to an understanding of who he is and who we are by this meditation on the human person.
Now, that kind of leads to my next question. You talk about how it focuses on really, sort of the life-giving nature of the love between a man and a woman. So, you know, we talk a lot about, being pro-life and having a culture of life. It certainly is much more than the typical issues we think about in terms of abortion and euthanasia. How does this theology of the body, how is it relevant to establishing a culture of life?
Oh, it's absolutely foundational, and I'm glad you're bringing that up. You know, we often do get sort of pigeonholed into thinking, well, this, you know, to be a culture of life, you're talking about abortion or the other end, euthanasia. The theology of the body is all about human life from womb to tomb. The theology of the body then becomes the foundation for looking at our humanity and looking at the faith in general, because it's meditating on who we are and what we're called to be. So that, you know, the culture of life, the human person, the human story, the human drama, all is encapsulated in this meditation on the theology of the body.
Now, you know, we here in Philadelphia are blessed with many wonderful apostolates, one of them being the one you work for, the Theology of the Body Institute, which is located right here in the Archdiocese. Tell us about the Theology of the Body Institute and what your role is there and how you came to be so involved in this very important work.
Sure, yeah, it's been an absolute grace, Chuck, honestly. I've been involved directly for about almost as long as the existence of the Institute itself. So we were founded around 2004. And I jumped on board in 2005. And we're a little local gem. Our offices are located in Downingtown, PA, so just over an hour from Center City, Philadelphia. And we offer week-long courses, about 9 or 10 courses that involve myself, Christopher West, faculty members like Dr. Janet Smith, Dr. John Haas, also who's local, the National Catholic Bioethics Center, Dr. John Grabowski, who recently worked on the Synod, and a number of other faculty, plunging into St. John Paul's theology of the body. So our institute, the main thrust of our institute, is to form the head and the heart in this, again, reloaded vision of what the Catholic faith is all about. We do that at a local retreat center in Black Rock, which is near Lancaster, Pennsylvania, as well as Elverson, PA. And then we often, throughout the year, will offer a course abroad. So might be Texas, might be Chicago. In the fall, we're going to Florida so that people don't have to come to the East Coast only, but we can go out to them.
Now, when we talk about sort of the nature of life and the importance of life, it seems like it's in our culture today, it's not only like, you know, the purpose of sort of sexual relations that's under attack. It seems to be the actual nature of life itself and what the purpose mm-hmm. of life is. And I think it's part of what John Paul II is trying to address in his work. What would your comments be on that? Like, how is this relevant to all the issues in our culture today, where we seem to be attacking the very nature of life itself and humanity, the human person?
Right, and I'll go back to your previous question about how I got involved personally, because my own story. I was born in 1969, so kind of at the beginning of the sexual revolution and the contraceptive mentality that started to rear its ugly head and has been with us for almost 50 years now. Those beginnings were the things that John Paul II was addressing in Theology of the Body. So I grew up in a culture of divorce. I grew up in a culture that was quickly becoming a contraceptive culture. My discovery of Theology of the Body was actually in the wake of my parents' divorce, and this was around 1986, I stumbled on John Paul's teaching in a Catholic bookstore in North Jersey. And, you know, 16 years old, coming from this, fresh from this divorce of my parents, I found this book that says, male and female, he created them, a theology of the body. And it was talking about the original unity that God designed for man and woman. It was talking about marriage as a sacramental sign of the world to come. It had phrases like original innocence, original nakedness, original unity. And it was so moving my heart because I was coming again from this broken place. And so, you know, John Paul is going right into those wounds when he talks about theology of the body. He saw, in particular, what a contraceptive mentality was going to do to marriage and family. And again, Chuck, with compassion, mercy, sensitivity to our listeners, maybe those who are tuning in right now, who really struggle with this teaching in the Catholic Church, perhaps, on contraception in particular, mercy, right? Mercy. Many have never heard the whole truth, the full truth of what it means to be human. So my discovery of theology of the body was a discovery of integration, of oneness, of fruitful, life-giving love. And it really inspired me, and it continues to inspire me now in my marriage with my wife Rebecca and our four little ones, that I'm called in all aspects of my faith to be a fully integrated human person, to live in the flesh, to live as a husband and a father, this theology of my body. And it's such a refreshing teaching because, again, it addresses all the wounds, all the aches in the present cultural climate. We have never been in such a confused period in human history.
You know, it's amazing I think about it, because I'm also a child of divorce. That what divine providence to be 16 years old and to walk into a bookstore.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and first
God.
Of all, as a 16-year-old, to have the presence of mind to pick up a book about the theology of the body.
Doug, I should say this, though, that I delved into it, and I was still moved. At the same time, it was deeply philosophical and theological, and I was 16 years old. So I did kind of tuck it away and didn't complete it. Although I've kept that book. I literally, 30 years I've had that book, I still have it in my library. It wasn't until the year 2000, so, you know, almost two decades later, that I rediscovered it through the teaching of Christopher West, who had discovered it himself in the 90s and unpacked it. But yeah, God's providence, his hand in all this is amazing. And to find myself now full-time working for the Institute is just grace upon grace.
So you were mentioning you are a husband and father. How specifically would you say that the teachings of theology of the body, how does it really help you be a better husband and father?
Yeah, oh gosh. Now a day goes by. Again, I've been full-time in this for the last 3 years. I've been speaking for the Institute for about 12. Not a day goes by where I don't think about, pray about, talk about this theology of the body. So it's something for the culture. It's something for the whole of humanity itself, but also for me, Bill Donahue, living just outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, trying to be a good man, be a good Catholic, be a good husband and father. So it's a constant invitation into my prayer life. Now, at the core of theology of the body is the fact that human life is gift, right? We've been gifted with life, and we're called to become a gift. And as a husband and father, right, this is what I try to be for my family, a gift, and to see my wife and my four children as gift. That's the driving sort of force behind the whole teaching. So that way we never use another human person. John Paul's very clear on this. He says every person's a gift, and the only response before another human person is to love them, never to use them. You think about a present culture, we completely flip that around, right? John Paul says, love persons, use things. Our culture teaches us to use people and love things. We flip it around. So I'm constantly called to kind of live it in my vocation and then to proclaim that to the world.
And it is such a beautiful message, you know. And when we talk sort of here within our Catholic bubble, we sometimes wonder, why isn't this so clear and accepted by other people? What would you say to that? Like, why is it that this beautiful message, this very high anthropology we have as Catholics, we have such a high vision and aspiration for the human person? Why is it often perceived in our culture as just the opposite? Like that somehow we're trying to restrict people and make people miserable and give them a bunch of rules. Like, you know.
Yeah. You've tapped into it, Chuck. I mean, it's the devil's delight that the very thing, the very icon of God in the world, the creation of man and woman, is the very thing that's most under attack and the most distorted, so that we're afraid of it. You know, one of the most refreshing teachings for me in the theology of the body is John Paul's meditation on Eros and Ethos. And just to explain to our listeners, Eros is that classic Greek term for passion, right? Eros, passion. Now, Ethos refers to our values, right? How our heart's attracted to the good, the true, and the beautiful. From Eros, we get erotic passion. From Ethos, we get ethics. Now, in our present culture, we so are afraid we would divorce those things, right? When you hear the word erotic, you instantly think, you know, this means pornography or strip clubs or something dirty or bad. And ethics means, well, that's the good, the right thing to do because I should do it. And we never seem to match these things as if they're called, John Paul teaches us, to be integrated, right? Your passion's a gift from God, right? To become a gift. Right, and it should correspond to your inner attraction for the true, the good, and the beautiful. That's ethos or ethics. But we our culture separates that. It thinks, well, ethics, well, that's sort of structure and commandments and prohibitions, and you don't have any fun, right? But the fun stuff's over here with the eros, right, with passion. And John Paul is beautifully and brilliantly combining these two and saying that they must dance together. They must be purified, right? They have to be purified through prayer so that you become unselfish. But it's the devil's delight to think that anything involving passion must be dismissed.
Right. You know, it's been a difficult past week with the massacre down in Orlando, and it's been a difficult couple of months with just a lot of stuff in the news about, you know, who can use what bathrooms and how do we get here? Because I imagine that although John Paul II in his writing sort of anticipates some of this, you wonder when he wrote this, even though it was only a couple decades ago, it was a much different culture even than what it's become very quickly. How did we get to this point where, you know, we're arguing about things which seem to be as common sense as, you know, women should be in women's bathrooms and men should be in men's bathrooms? And how does the theology of the body, again, speak to that issue?
Yeah, you know, you're right, Chuck, in saying that John Paul II didn't exactly address this because, again, it's been so sped up. I mean, this juggernaut of an agenda that's happened even in the last year, how could he have foreseen it? At the same time, John Paul II, he did foresee what was about to happen. And it's really been a couple hundred years that this has all been prepared. And this is something we go into in our week-long courses, and we'll talk about, I know in this show, we'll talk about next month in July 17th to the 22nd, I'm offering one of these courses. But, you know, many of your listeners probably are familiar with Rene Descartes. At some point in their high school or college, learned about the phrase, cogito ergo sum, right? I think, therefore I am. How do we get to the point today, to your question? Well, Descartes said that, you know, centuries ago, I think, therefore I am. And when he did that, he actually separated human identity so that who I am is in my thought. I think, therefore I am. As if the body is somehow secondary or not the real me or just luggage that carries around my soul. You know?
Right.
But when we say that, we already set in motion a divorce. Back to our original theme when we talked about divorce, a culture of divorce. Body and soul are separated. We've been sort of drinking in this very foul, broken air for hundreds of years. And today, transgender, and again, with sensitivity and compassion to people who've never heard the full truth of what it means to be human, I think I'm a woman, therefore I am, right? Bruce Jenner, God bless him, right? I think, therefore I am. We see it all over the place today, the fallout from what a philosopher said centuries ago. We're now experiencing it day to day. We're experiencing it in Target when there's a bathroom that a man can walk into a woman's room because I think, therefore I am. So I think we already saw this coming. John Paul's very clear on that when we separate body and soul, instead of seeing a person as a gift to be loved but as a thing to be used, we've turned into human machines. And our body parts are interchangeable. You know, we can have a sex change. In actuality, every cell, and again with mercy, let's talk about Bruce Jenner here, every cell of his body, every somatic cell of his body is male. There's an XY pattern there in his chromosomes. We can't change that. So rather in our present world trying to change reality, we should step back and receive the reality that we're gifted and then try to discover what it means to be man, what it means to be woman. John Paul's theology of the body helps us do just that.
Right. If you're just tuning in, you listen to Culture of Life on Holy Spirit Radio. My guest is Bill Dunahee of the Theology of the Body Institute. So, Bill, we've talked about a number of issues. At this retreat, tell us about the retreat coming up and how people have the opportunity maybe to dig into some of these issues, maybe get a little bit outside the culture, because I know you're going to a nice, comfortable retreat center to be able to kind of maybe recharge and really address some of the things we're talking about.
Yeah, you know, and God knows we all need that. I mean, everybody needs a retreat. In a certain sense, especially lay people, we need to step away, moms and dads even, to make the sacrifice of getting away to rediscover our faith. So throughout the year, we offer, as an institute, we offer these head and heart immersion courses in the theology of the body. And Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, is where we host one of them. So this coming July, just next month, July 17th to the 22nd, I'll be teaching a TOB1 course. So that's the entry level. It runs from Sunday night, July 17th, to Friday lunchtime, July 22nd. Again, just about an hour outside of Philadelphia. Beautiful Amish country. The retreat center is absolutely gorgeous. And we build in 30 lecture hours. And we have a workbook that will be going right to the source of John Paul's reflections on the human person. We build in prayer time, adoration. We have penance service, daily mass, as well as free time in the afternoons and in the evenings that you can process these teachings. You can also network with people from around the country and around the world at the meals and at the break times as well. We have, literally over the last 12 years, we've had every vocation represented, every age group, from high school, college kids to senior citizens, married, single, celibate, consecrated, and it's just a beautiful microcosm of the entire church that comes together for these 5 days. So information there, and we'll repeat this, I'm sure, but tobinstitute.org, and then you would simply click on programs and find our schedule. Anyone listening who wants to come next month, and again, it's a sacrifice to take a week away, but it's so good, enter when you register this code, TOBFRIEND, and we can shave off a couple hundred hours on that registration fee.
And what's the name of the retreat again?
Black Rock Retreat Center, and the courses we offer are called Head and Heart Immersion, right? Intellectually stimulating, and then personal encounter with the Lord through the heart.
Sounds great, and you know, when you say that word immersion, it sounds my reaction sounds comforting in the sense that sometimes I feel like we are immersed in a different soup, if you will, out in the culture where it's almost imperceptible sometimes when you're kind of living in this culture of how it actually affects you. And it does seem wonderful to be able to get away to really focus on some of these issues and get with people of the same mind to kind of refresh yourself and then come back to try to evangelize the culture.
Yeah, you know, that just personally as a teacher and always a student, right? We're always a student. I have experienced that every time. These weeks that I teach are one of my favorite weeks of the year because I get a chance, as you're saying, Chuck, to just step away and to step into reality. Right? What we're living in now is a very broken world, a very confused world, but these week-long courses, people just, they love it. We create a Facebook group afterwards for each of the courses, and all the students practically sign up, and sometimes for years, we go back and we network, we share thoughts, and we ask for prayers. And we become a little family that says, yes, there is reality. And what we tasted on these retreats in the presence of Jesus and Mary was the truth of who we are. So it's a B12 shot for sure. It's just so good.
Now, this, of course, is the Jubilee Year of Mercy called by Pope Francis. Bill, do you see opportunities, specifically being the Year of Mercy, to maybe, of course, with standing on top of the foundation of theology of the body, to again try to reapproach the culture in a new way, especially in a spirit of mercy, to try to help them to understand, you know, the beauty of the teaching and how it really can help them to help people to flourish as human beings?
Yeah, I do find that. I find, you know, this is this amazing Jubilee Year of Mercy, but I feel like in the last, you know, again, dozen years or so we've been in existence, mercy's been a thread throughout all of our courses. Because, again, in the wake of the sexual revolution of the late 60s and all the gender dysphoria of our present day in the culture, we've always been longing to know who we are and why we're here. And, you know, when the mass of people have just been ignorant of what that's really all about because of the media distortions and the fallen culture, it's a mercy to hear it for the first time. So we always teach it in that approach of not the sledgehammer of truth, right, but the fragrance of truth, which is beautiful. And when you present the church's teaching on human sexuality, again, which, as you said, in this culture of life touches on every aspect of human life, it's not just true, but it's good and it's beautiful. And so it starts to slide under the radar. It starts to move hearts, and people understand why the church teaches what she teaches. And they realize it's not just this cold ethical guideline, but an ethos that hits our hearts. And so we say, well, why wouldn't I want to believe this? Why wouldn't I want to do that? And, you know, do this and not do that. So we present it in an attractive way that approaches the heart. Every human person has this ache, right? We all have an ache for our identity, who we are, and our vocation, what we're called to be. So when that's presented in an attractive way, not shoved down their throat, right, or just preached as a cold doctrine to be followed because you should, people are moved. You know, and we've had over the years, we've had Protestant brothers and sisters come to our courses. And a couple of years ago, I was doing a course, and a wonderful evangelical woman came for the week-long course. And every Thursday night, near the end, we have a bonfire out in the woods at the retreat center, and everybody gathers around, and it's just a great time to share graces and what the week's been for everyone studying this teaching. And this beautiful woman, Kristen, evangelical, she said, you know, I've just had such an amazing week. This is a little slice of heaven. If this is what the Catholic Church really teaches, I think we're all going to become Catholic. And we just rejoiced. And everybody's clapping. And, like, you know, it just became such a moment because it slid under the radar of all the stereotypes that people can have sometimes of the Catholic Church. And said, you know, it reaches the heart. So this is what we're called to be. This is what we're made for.
That's wonderful. At this point, we're going to, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Culture of Life and Holy Spirit Radio. My guest is Bill Donahue of the Theology of the Body Institute. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break, and when we come back on the other side of the break, we'll talk more about, again, how the theology of the body, the teachings of John Paul II, can really be used to have the power to restore our culture and to build a culture of life. We'll be right back.
Come. Join a prayerful and uplifting experience at the Carmelite Monastery in Philadelphia on July 8th through the 16th for a novena in honor of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Rosary and Litany begin at 6:45 p.m. The Holy Sacrifice of the Mass is celebrated at 7:30 p.m. That's at the Carmelite Monastery, July 8th through the 16th, a novena in honor of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. The voice of our shepherd, Archbishop Charles Chaput.
And when we're in the midst of that pruning and suffering, it's so important for us to develop the possibility of hope in our lives, because we know that that pruning is for our good. It gives us health. It gives us a possibility of new growth. Perhaps God is trying to turn our lives in another direction because we're growing wild rather than in the pattern of the gospel and the pattern of his son.
This is Holy Spirit Radio, WCOJ 1420, Coatesville, and WISP 1570 AM, Doylestown in Philadelphia.
Holy Spirit Radio presents Following the Truth with host Gary Zimak on the first Friday of the month at 11 AM. Gary will talk about Jesus Christ, play inspirational music, and share advice for following the Lord in our daily lives. That's Following the Truth, the first Friday of the month at 11 a.m., with an encore Sunday at 2 p.m. on Holy Spirit Radio.
All right, welcome back to Culture of Life here in Holy Spirit Radio. We're talking to Bill Dunhee of the Theology of the Body Institute, having a great conversation. In fact, it's so great that my colleague Barbara Schinkel has joined us. She was in the studio helping produce the show, but wanted to jump into the conversation. Barbara, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Chuck. And I think visions for the show would be that we'd love to have live-in callers. So I'm going to be Barbara from Doylestown calling in with my one question. And thank you for having me. You know, you can't escape the fact that you have in the news Pope Francis saying that he believes that most of all Catholic marriages are invalid. And so many comments about this with regards to, are we really this debased a culture that we don't understand permanence anymore? Are we really failing in our marriage prep programs? And is Pope Francis right? I mean, maybe that we have been so deficient in this teaching that we're this far behind.
First off, I'd like to say I think that Pope Francis is famous for these off-the-cuff remarks, right, in some plane rides or different gatherings. And sometimes they really, in his words after World Youth Day back in Rio, he said, "I want to make a mess." Well, sometimes that happens. It's really kind of shocking to hear him say that. Now, you know, is this canonical, this statement that most sacramental marriages are null? I don't know that Pope Francis is saying that explicitly, but I think what he's saying is that, yeah, the majority of people don't fully understand what marriage is. What it's called to be. On that note, I would certainly agree. And, you know, just even looking at my own marriage preparation with Rebecca, and this would be 13 years ago, a seminarian or a religious will go through years of formation before making their vow. For married couples, it could be a weekend. It could be a three-hour session. So even in light of that fact, our marriage preparation is very poor, very deficient. So do we fully know what we're getting involved in? It's a bit of a wake-up call, right? We need to understand what marriage is. Marriage, in the light of the theology of the body, is the foundation of the culture of life, right? Pope Benedict said that it's in the family, through marriage, right, in the family that the blueprints of human existence are handed on. So this is so important. When I would give talks to married couples preparing for marriage, and I did this for years, we presented the Joy-Filled Marriage Program, which is a pre-canon program soaked in the theology of the body, so it gives people the full vision. I did this in Manhattan, I did this in Philadelphia, and in different parts of New Jersey over the years, and we had, at one point, we had 500 couples, I believe it was, fill out evaluations, and 92 to 93% of these couples engaged to be married in the Catholic Church, 92 to 93% were cohabitating, sexually active, and contracepting already. Now that is scandalous. These are the people that want to be married in the Catholic Church, and yet they're exactly at the other end of the spectrum on living what the Catholic Church teaches about marriage. So I think that's what Pope Francis is tapping into here. We really don't know. Now, the theology of the body, as we've been talking about in this interview, is about two big things, right? Identity, who am I, and vocation, what am I called to be? The more we can reflect on that, the happier we'll be, and then the flourishing of the culture of human life is going to happen. Because we know who we are, and we know what we're called to be. I think absolutely we need this theology of the body to make sense of things. And we need the whole church to pray about this. The Synod on the Family, the document that came out after that, is telling us to study theology of the body. St. John Paul II was cited numerous times that we have this treasure in the church, and it has to be proclaimed.
So, Bill, for our listening audience, how would you, kind of outline John Paul II's teaching or his catechesis on theology of the body to kind of give them a framework of, you know, sort of scope of what he's talking about and how it impacts the topics we've been discussing?
Sure. I'd love to do that. And I'll do this in as microwave fashion as I can with the time that we're given. But it's fascinating to see the structure and actually what sort of precipitated John Paul's thought here. So we'll go back to 1968. This is Humanae Vitae, right, debuts on human life, the little encyclical that blessed Pope Paul VI wrote. Now, he reaffirmed the Church's teaching on contraception when the world was sort of begging for the Catholic Church to allow contraception into marriages. Blessed Paul VI said, "Oh, we can't do that, and here's why," and he laid it out in a very brief encyclical on human life, Humanae Vitae. Now, in that letter, he said, "We need a total vision of man to understand what the Church is teaching here." Now, he didn't get into this expanded total vision of man there, but St. John Paul II as Karol Wojtyła, right? Cardinal Karol Wojtyła, Polish cardinal, he took up that challenge. And so from 1974 to 1978, in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament, the little chapel, St. John Paul II started writing the theology of the body. So he gave this total vision of man Blessed Paul VI called for. And so 4 years, and he finished it, he literally finished writing the theology of the body first as a book in the 30 days or so between the election of John Paul I and his own election. So the ink was still wet on the page of the theology of the body when John Paul was elected to the papacy. In the first year of his papacy, of course, he's quite busy, but what he did is he took the book that he wrote and broke it into these Wednesday audiences that he delivered from Rome. So from 79 to 84, 1984, practically every Wednesday with some breaks, he delivered this theology of the body to St. Peter's Square. So you've got, you know, tens of thousands of people, of course, you know, sporadically appearing and disappearing on vacations or whatever. But he disseminated this teaching to the entire church. It's fitting that he did that. As the Bishop of Rome, as a bishop, catechesis is key to the role of a bishop. And he did that at the very beginning of his papacy. So the total vision of man, he looks at two big questions. And I already referenced this earlier in this interview, right? Identity and vocation. What does it mean to be a human person, male and female? And how do I live in a way to be truly happy, to be whole? So for the first question, which is one of identity, John Paul goes back to Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. Right? He goes back not to original sin. A lot of times I'll do talks and I'll ask our good Catholic audience to fill in the blanks. I'll say original, and they all say sin. Right? I say, no, wait, original innocence. John Paul starts with original innocence. Right? That's our beginning. And he calls it original humanity. Then he meditates on the fall and how we are all sundered in our relationship with God, within ourselves, with others in creation. And he calls that historical man. Right? So you've got original man, historical man. Now, in historical man, our fallenness, Jesus interjects. So historical man, for John Paul II, is this meditation on the fall and yet the rising of the human person through grace, through Jesus. Then the third part of the first question of identity is eschatological man, or glorified man. So where have we come from, our origin? Where are we now, our history, fallen and yet redeemed? And where are we going? The glory of heaven, the integrated human person, body and soul, reunited in heaven, right? The resurrection. So when we have that identity in place, we realize we're called from the beginning to be gift. And all human life, especially, of course, the gift of human sexuality, is good, right? Then we see our fall as a rejection of that gift, but Jesus restoring the gift and then pointing it towards heaven. Human love is directed to be forever, towards the infinite, in and through the body. All of this is happening in and through our body. So we get our identity through that first meditation. Then he switches gears in the catechesis and starts to look now at the vocation of every human person, which, again, is to love, and which we've kind of always known throughout our lives, but he kind of shows us how that's done in a spousal, beautiful way. He meditates on the vocations of celibacy for the kingdom, first, his own vocation as a priest, and then the sacrament of marriage. And he shows how both celibacy for the kingdom and sacramental marriage, again, are spousal, that there's a call to authentic fatherhood and motherhood, to life in both vocations. It's no coincidence that we call priests father, right? And those in religious orders, sister or mother or brother. He's the Holy Father. So by meditating on celibacy for the kingdom, we get this revamped, refreshed look at what celibacy is as a vocation to love. Our culture sees celibacy as a great negative, right? The big no. No to sex. No to intimacy. No to family. John Paul completely flips it on its head. He says, no, that's not what it's about. It's you might say, supra-sexual, right? It's sees the sign of marriage and family life as pointing to the ultimate end, the family of God, the holy marriage feast of heaven. So what a refreshed and beautiful way to look at celibacy for the kingdom, as an act of spousal love. Then he goes back down and looks at sacramental marriage. And I say back down because not because marriage is less than celibacy for the kingdom, but it's a different expression. It's an earthly expression of the kind of spousal love and intimacy God is calling us to. So spouses understand their vocation as pointing to God as well. Moms and dads, husbands and wives. Now, both vocations, John Paul ends his catechesis with how both vocations are called to love and fruitfulness. And he talks about the language of the body, and even the language of the body in the liturgy, in the Mass, and how all of this is called to fruitfulness. So by the end of the catechesis, again, which is a big book, it's a mammoth work, by the end of it, he addresses contraception. And he says, John Paul II says himself, I am addressing what Blessed Paul VI called for, this total vision of man. Everything that we've meditated on, everything I've written in this theology of the body is answering the question of why the Church teaches this. So you get to the end, and you say to yourself, wow, I get it now. I get it. Why would I ever contracept, right, emotionally, physically, spiritually? Why would I want any barriers or walls between my heart and others, my heart and God? So this is what happens in a miniature way on our week-long courses, that people come to realize what the Church is really teaching and why. And the end is always joy. The end is always hope and life-giving love.
All right, Bill, we're going to take a break now, and when we come back from the break, I do want to talk to you about what impact the theology of the body is having on Christian unity and the ecumenical movement. We'll be right back after this.
The Bucks County Pro-Life Coalition invites you to come out and run for life and your health on June 25th at the beautiful Peace Valley Park in Doylestown. This event benefits the area crisis pregnancy centers and homes. Details about the run can be found on the website at BucksCountyProLife.com. That's BucksCountyProLife.com. Malvern Retreat House is having a family festival on Sunday, June 26th. Enjoy Mass at Malvern's beautiful grotto, followed by food and entertainment on the lawn. There'll be a rosary procession from St. Joseph's Hall to Our Lady of Lourdes Grotto, and much more. Register by going to malvernretreat.com or by calling 610-644-0400. The voice of our shepherd, Archbishop Charles Chaput.
It's a custom in the Catholic Church not to talk a lot before Mass, to have a kind of a reverential silence so people can prepare to pray. But it's also an acknowledgement that Jesus is uniquely present here in this building in the Eucharist, and not to pay so much attention to one another that we ignore him. And after Mass, we should have a reverential silence. You can certainly talk in a low voice as long as you don't distract people who want to pray before the Lord in the tabernacle.
This is Holy Spirit Radio, WCOJ 1420, Coatesville, and WISP 1570 AM, Doylestown in Philadelphia.
You know, you were saying earlier about the Protestant woman who came to one of your classes and really, really touched her heart. And she really, when she realized what the Church taught, she maybe half jokingly thought about she would consider being Catholic. Do you think? I mean, one thing I've noticed, I want you to comment on, is it seems as though God can bring good out of evil. That one of the things I see happening, because even if you know who from Albert Mohler from the Southern Baptist Seminary. He even, I saw an interview or a speech he did recently where he was starting to acknowledge that perhaps the Catholic Church was right about contraception. Do you see that happening where maybe our separated brothers and sisters, because of the fruit of this, are starting to kind of work backwards and say, hey, wait a minute, maybe the Church was right about this whole thing about contraception and why it does go against God's will?
Yes, absolutely, Chuck. We've been seeing that over and over again either when we're going abroad and doing talks, myself and Christopher or Damon Owens, when we give talks, when students come to us for these retreats from the Protestant denominations, there's this awakening and this love. In fact, we just had a blog post written by one of our former students, and he's a Lutheran pastor, Pastor Spencer. And he said, Catholics, I hope you realize what you've got. Please tell us all about it. Spread the good word. So it is starting to stir things up. And I'm right now in dialogue with a wonderful Presbyterian minister. She and her husband are both Presbyterian ministers, and they've got four beautiful children. and they really have this movement in their hearts right now. They're both tasting theology of the body. She's come to a course, and they want to make the jump. They want to come in. So theology of the body is becoming this wonderful connector, this bridge that is bringing many to realize what the incarnation is all about, what Christianity is all about. And it's such a gift to be a witness to it all.
You know, like that pastor said, you know, I hope you Catholics realize what you have. And I think sometimes I get the sense we don't. When I say that, I mean, you know, the church as a whole. What can we do to actually evangelize our fellow Catholics about the beauty of John Paul II's teaching on the theology of the body? Because it seems like I know many Catholics who still aren't familiar with it, aren't even aware of the term. You know, how do we get our fellow Catholics to really embrace this beautiful teaching?
Yeah, I mean, Chuck, that's my call, my lifelong mission now is just to get the word out, because I think the estimate is 3% of Catholics in the world know about this teaching, which is Catholicism in its authentic fullness. This is it. I think, you know, to make a personal plug here, come to the Institute, take a course. There's nothing you can, I'm going to reference some books and some other resources, which are excellent, but there's nothing like giving yourself a week's retreat to actually head on, face this teaching, study it, pray over it, network with other people about it, and come out just on fire to learn more. But to point to some books, I think rather than jump right into the catechesis itself, which again is deeply theological and philosophical, many might not be ready for that, go to it eventually, absolutely, and our courses go to the source material and break it open. But I would start with something like this. This is a book by Father Anthony Percy, and he's an Australian priest. I had the grace to meet him last year in Sydney. He wrote a book called Theology of the Body Made Simple. So that's Father Anthony Percy, Theology of the Body Made Simple. Really tiny little walkthrough. There's a great book by Mary Healy, H-E-A-L-Y, Mary Healy, and it's called Men and Women Are from Eden. And that's an introduction to the theology of the body. And for a little bit more of an expanded book to dive into, Christopher West's book, Theology of the Body for Beginners. And if you go to ascensionpress.org, they do a lot of publication of our workbooks and different things. Ascensionpress.org or .com will have a ton of Theology of the Body resources. We've got videos online. You can go to tobinstitute.org and find little snippets of articles from our blog that introduce Theology of the Body. You can watch some of our video clips. I think everybody needs to just, like for myself especially too, to just marinate in this, to constantly read and reflect on it. And you start to realize this is Catholicism. You start to see it in all the works of Pope Francis, Pope Benedict, John Paul II. And you need to prayerfully study it constantly. It is Catholicism. And when the church starts to wake up and realize what it is, that this is what we're proclaiming to the world, it's just going to be this joyful fire that's going to spread and catch hearts.
Bill, I was wondering if this is such a success, even though it is maybe not well known, but it becomes such a success among our culture because they realize the sexual revolution was a failure. I mean, we are now in the most devolved states of the sexual revolution, which is complete gender confusion. But for those who've lived through it, they're not happy. They weren't happy with the hookup culture, and they did not find happiness in quick encounters with other people, and they, perhaps contracepting couples find their marriage at odds and at broken apart. This really resonates with people who realize that the lies that they were taught didn't bring them happiness. Is that correct?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And that's, and it kind of, it's a tragedy in a sense, right? Because it's going to happen through the sad realization that this can never fulfill me, right? That I've been sold a bill of goods. But the great joy is that we have the blueprints. We have, again, the treasure chest of who we really are, what we're called to be. We've seen that over and over again over the last dozen years when students come to our courses. They come and they thought they knew what Catholicism was about, even. And there's this transformation that happens. Our culture is trying so hard to fill the hole, right? And just for hundreds of years through this post-Enlightenment, post-modern reductionism, right? We just don't see reality. We don't have this joyful cosmology or worldview. It's just empty. And people are aching to know. There's got to be more. there's got to be more. Why can't I find this satisfaction in life? Why can't I retain joy? So we know as Catholics that there's this hole in the heart, this infinite hole in the heart. And in the Institute, we often refer to it as the ache, right? It's the Kalpax Dei, the capacity for God, for the infinite. And, you know, the culture is constantly trying to fill it, flood it, you know, keep the noise playing, keep the distractions going. We're staring at our smartphones instead of each other, looking to constantly fill this hole. And it never, ever works. And we're so restless. But when we spend time in that quiet again, when we spend time reflecting on reality, just even, again, the physicality of our own bodies, in this gender dysphoric era that we're living in right now, people just need to be still, be a person, reflect on the masculinity and femininity. And it's all there. God's revealed in creation itself, in nature, this great paradigm of giving and receiving, of gift. We just need to slow down. And when we create these week-long courses, people can step away and experience that. When we give a talk, they drink it in and they realize, this is what I'm made for. This is what I'm aching for. I've had amazing encounters giving talks over the years for the Institute. And just real quick, one of my favorites is I was at a Theology on Tap. I was doing a Theology of the Body talk at a pub. And as I'm delivering this teaching Theology of the Body to a crowded bar, right, of young adults, I noticed the bartender keeps making eye contact, and he's leaning on the bar, and he's got a knitted brow. He's kind of like, what's going on? And I'm noticing this bartender is suddenly engaged. Now, a year later, I'm at a diner with my family on a Sunday after Mass, and I'm coming out. We're finished our breakfast. We're walking out of the diner, and I notice all of a sudden this guy looking at me, and I walk past, and he grabs my arm, and it was the bartender, and he's sitting with his wife and his 5-year-old daughter, and there's a baby in the car seat next to him. And he points to the baby and he says, this is your fault. And I said, excuse me? I'm not really following what you're saying right now. He said, you know, I listened to your talk. You were talking about human sexuality and marriage and fatherhood and motherhood, and my wife and I, we had so much fear about having another child, and we became, you know, just so contraceptive. And he said, you gave that talk in that bar that night, and I just opened up, and this is your fault. And he said, of course, smiling. Now, yeah, our culture is longing to find ourselves, and we're made for relationship. We're made for fatherhood and motherhood, and it's just a joy. When the culture gets it, it's going to be awesome, and there's going to be babies everywhere.
You know, Bill, that story really illustrates how accessible these teachings are and how impactful they can be. If someone's listening and saying, well, this all sounds great, but it all sounds very heady and philosophical, what would you say to them? Like, who should be considering going to your course coming up in Lancaster?
Yeah, everybody come. I mean, over the years, I've taught a high school freshman up to a 67-year-old Byzantine bishop. I've hit everybody, and it's always the same. You come in, yes, it's intellectually stimulating, but you don't need a master's in systematic theology. The way we teach is a very kind of Lectio Divina style. In other words, a meditation. When I teach theology of the body, we go to the source, we break open these beautiful thoughts, but as a teacher, I illustrate it with sacred art, right? Or I might play a song from popular culture. We might watch a movie clip from, you know, it could be The Incredibles, it could be The Mission, it could be The Passion, who knows? But we bring in these meditative moments so that what I've just intellectually studied can take flesh in some song I've heard my whole life that moves my heart, in some work of art, in some scene from a film that perfectly illustrates it. So we realize the human person is complex, right? And different things speak to different people. So we try to incorporate all those things in a very natural way. Granted, it's a little bit ADD when I teach because I'm like, oh, I have a great song from 1984 from Journey. I'm going to play that right now. But it always illustrates the theological points that we make. So anybody can come. The teaching will cater to your own heart, because it's not just us teaching. The Holy Spirit is at work. All of our class hours, all of our lecture hours on these retreats are in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament. So if anything, you get 30 hours of adoration when we come to a week-long course. Jesus is at work. The Holy Spirit's at work as well. So everyone should come.
That's awesome.
Just a quick question on what's going on with college campuses right now. We have the incident at the Stanford University rape case where there was such an outrage over the horrific rape that happened to a young, unconscious woman. And yet we know this goes on at every frat party in many colleges across the country. We're dealing with people who are horrified by this behavior, and yet we live in a hookup culture. Talk a little bit about that.
I mean, we're living in such a paradoxical time. There's so much hypocrisy, right, when things are done, horrific acts like this are done, and we're quick to punish and to be outraged, and yet we allow this complete pornification of women to continue on television commercials, in films, in song. We continue to produce music that is misogynistic, that treats women like garbage, that treats them like objects. And we don't see that these are connected, right? This is the whole point of the theology of the body, is everything is connected. Women have never suffered so much as in this day and age. We could talk about, you know, all the goods that have come through feminism, through trying to ennoble and show the beauty and dignity of women. And yet the paradox, again, the hypocrisy, is that the media continues to paint women as sexual objects. And you go into a CVS or a Walgreens and you see this splash all along the magazine covers as you walk through the aisle, right, that are at the level of a, you know, six-year-old kid, that a woman is an object to be used. These two streams cannot abide. They can't keep running at the same time. We have to have a true renaissance, a true restoration of the dignity and the beauty of woman. You know, when Blessed Paul VI closed off Vatican II, in 1965, I believe, there was this beautiful statement that he said about the age of woman, that the age of woman is coming. I wish I had the quote on me right now, but he said that we need women's genius now more than ever. We need her tenderness, her sensitivity, her gracious heart. John Paul II wrote a beautiful letter on the dignity of woman. And that's what we need to see, is that men are here not to be the frat boy, not to take advantage or to use or abuse, but men are here to be stewards, guardians, and protectors of the beauty and dignity of women. And it's certainly not because, you know, they're the weaker sex. Please, they're the stronger sex, right? That we protect these life givers, these tabernacles of the Most High. And when we do our courses, often people will step away. A great priest friend of mine, Father Kevin, I remember after he took a course on theology of the body, he said, "I want to become the greatest defender and protector of women." You know, he got it. He got that this icon, the masterpiece of God in the visible world, is woman. That's one of the great benefits of theology of the body regarding identity. Men come to know who they are. Women come to know who they are. And it's this stewardship and protection of one another, but especially of men for women. There's, you know, across the boards in our present culture, women are attacked. And men are slipping off to the sidelines, or God forbid, they're doing the attacking themselves. We have to restore the proper balance. We have to restore the true image of man and woman. And by the grace of God, we have theology of the body to help us do that. Those are the blueprints for us.
So, Bill, we're running out of time. So if you could just tell us one more time, give us the details and logistics of the...
Sure. So next month, July 17th to the 22nd, right here in the local Philadelphia area, I'll be leading a Theology of the Body 1 entry-level course. So just about an hour south, west of Philadelphia in Lancaster County, PA. But you can go to tobinstitute.org to find that. Just click on schedule and find the July course. If you're in this area and you're listening now, just enter the code TOBFRIEND, all one word, and we'll save off a few hundred dollars on the registration for this week-long course. You've got lodging, food, the workbook, the whole week-long course is provided in that registration fee.
All right, Bill, thank you for joining us. Again, this is Culture of Life and Holy Spirit Radio. We thank Bill Donahue from Theology of the Body Institute for joining us. Thank you, Barbara, for joining me on this inaugural show. We'll be back for our next episode in a month, and thank you for listening. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you both so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.